I'm Brandi Cruz, and this is Politics Unpacked. Politics Unpacked is brought to you by our friends at Future 42. Stay and fight. Sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that and get involved in the political process in Washington State. Before we dive into it, I want to talk about how the schedule of the legislative calendar works to help you understand kind of how bills progress and when they get to the point where we can call them dead or alive. So this is a short session, which means that we're about halfway through. And for a lot of bills, if they haven't progressed out of committee, they're just dead for the session and they're not going to be considered. So on February 9th, there was the fiscal committee cutoffs. So that basically means that if a bill hasn't emerged from the House fiscal committees or the Senate Ways and Means Committee or the Transportation Committees in their house of origin, so a Senate bill in the Senate, House bill in the House, that means it's probably dead for the session. So first were two bills introduced by Republicans in response to an undivided whistleblower report that we aired back in October. The report highlighted self-dealing within the state's community reinvestment program. Basically, there were BIPOC nonprofits in the state of Washington that were given millions of dollars in taxpayer funds that were supposed to be sent out to qualifying community members to help with home down payments, starting businesses, paying off personal credit card debt. And we uncovered, with the help of a whistleblower, a lot of instances where those BIPOC nonprofits were using the money to help themselves, to help their family members, to help their employees. So in response to that, Republicans had introduced two bills that would have dealt with the underlying issue. First, Senate Bill 6205 would have prevented self-dealing by basically saying if you have a state contract to hand out money, you can't use it on yourself. That bill has not advanced this session, so it is officially dead. And then a second bill, Senate Bill 6167, would have prohibited stacking in programs that are designed to help people with home down payments, because there's more than just the community reinvestment program. There's things like the Covenant Home Ownership Program that's also a reparation style program. And what we uncovered in our whistleblower report is there were examples of well-connected people who got multiple chunks of money toward the down payment of a home. In one instance, there was a woman who's the daughter of someone who worked for the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle who got like $350,000 from various places toward the down payment of a home that cost about $430,000. So she almost got a free house. And she was able to layer so many of these programs. So Senate Bill 6167 would have said, no, we want to spread the love around to more people and help more people achieve the dream of home ownership. So you can't be stacking these down payment assistance programs. Well, that bill is now dead for the session because Democrats did not want to advance it forward. You'd think these bills are kind of common sense, like, hey, let's prevent self-dealing, let's help more people, but I guess not. A couple other bills that are dead. There was a lot of bills introduced this session that had to do with responding to the federal government's increased immigration enforcement. One of those bills that's still alive would prohibit police officers or federal agents from wearing masks, even though a state law can't really dictate what federal agents do, but that bill is still alive and is likely to go to the governor's desk. But two other bills related to federal immigration agents or efforts are now dead for the legislative session. So one of them would have prohibited ICE agents who worked under Donald Trump from ever being hired as a law enforcement officer in the state of Washington. That's no longer being considered. And then there was another bill, House Bill 2648, that basically would have required local police officers to track and document the federal government's immigration enforcement activity. So basically, if officers were to encounter a federal agent, they would have to turn on their body camera footage, report it to their superior officers, etc. But House Bill 2648 will not be advancing any further. A couple other controversial bills that just didn't gain any traction this session. House Bill 2313 would have allowed cities to start government-run grocery stores. Of course, those never really work out. They just end up being kind of barren, which was the warning that was given to Democrats who introduced this. That bill is no longer being considered this session. Also, House Bill 2559 would have added taxes and fees onto short-term rentals like Airbnbs. There was a lot of consternation about this, given the fact there's already so many extra fees added onto the cost of renting an Airbnb. So that bill is no longer going to be considered this session. Meanwhile, there are some bills that have advanced and are making making pretty good progress. One of them is a controversial bill that would make it more difficult to challenge the validity of someone's ballot. So in Washington state, we have a process where if you believe that a ballot was cast improperly, you can challenge it. And then individual county auditors will have to decide whether that ballot should count or not count. But a Democrat-backed bill, House Bill 1916, which passed out of the House along party lines, all Democrats in favor, all Republicans opposed, it would basically add steps to the process of challenging a ballot. It would say that you can't just challenge a group of ballots, you have to challenge each of them individually, submit an individual form for each and every ballot that you're seeking to challenge, and then you have to sign these attestations that you have firsthand knowledge that would lead you to believe that the ballot was cast improperly. It says, a statement of the factual basis for the challenge, including any information required by this section, must be included. Challenges must be based on personal knowledge, which for these purposes is defined as firsthand knowledge through experience or observation of the facts upon each ground that the challenge is based, and contain any documentation or evidence supporting the facts upon which each ground for the challenge is based. And on top of that, the bill adds penalties for people who submit challenges that aren't valid. So, for instance, if you were to knowingly provide false information as part of a voter registration challenge, you could be fined up to $10,000. And then it says any challenger that knowingly challenges a person's voter registration without reasonable cause under this chapter, either before or during an election, is guilty of a misdemeanor. Each instance where a challenge knowingly makes a challenger knowingly makes a challenge without reasonable cause constitutes a separate offense. Republican State Representative Jim Walsh said this would have a chilling effect on people who want to challenge shady voter registration.
Mr. Speaker, it is important that we restore trust in our elections. On that much, I'm sure we agree. But, Mr. Speaker, the method, the means, the process by which we go about restoring and assuring trust in our elections, Mr. Speaker, that's where opinions differ. And, Mr. Speaker, we are at a point in time, as you've heard, where trust in our election processes is not high. And it's resulted in low voter turnout in this state. Mr. Speaker, what this bill does is it raises the barriers to citizens, rightfully registered voters, and for that matter, non-voters of concern in this state to exercise their lawful duty to act as a check on a system of registering voters that does not have enough checks and balances in it. Mr. Speaker, as you well know, in this state, we have automatic voter registration. And while this is a well-intended system to try to encourage voter participation, in the time that automatic voter registration has been our policy, voter participation has actually declined. Now, how can we correct this? Well, Mr. Speaker, we have a process of correcting it. And it's not involving conspiracy theories, and it's not involving illegal discrimination. It's a good system in our current law by which the people can act as the check.
State Representative Beth Dolio supported the proposal. Here's what she had to say.
Across this country and across this state, we've seen a surge in mass voter registration challenges, often based on flawed data, conspiracy theories, and unreliable technology. The vast majority of these challenges are rejected, but not before they overwhelm election administrators, intimidate voters, and discourage lawful participation in our elections. These laws have historically been used to target newly naturalized citizens, voters of color, students, people voting overseas, people with disabilities. Even a baseless challenge can make an eligible voter think twice before going to the polls. House Bill 1916 brings clarity, fairness, and uniformity to this process. It empowers election officials to dismiss meritless challenges. It requires individualized affidavits, and it raises the standard of proof and imposes accountability for frivolous or false claims. Washington has long been a leader in protecting voter rights. This bill ensures that we continue that legacy by safeguarding voters and strengthening trust in our elections.
But again, that bill made it off the floor of the House, so it is advancing, and it comes as something very different happens in Washington, D.C. You might have heard that Republicans, with the help of one Democrat in the U.S. House of Representatives, voted to pass the SAVE Act, which would require voter ID if states want to participate in federal elections. Meanwhile, the big story in Olympia continues to be the millionaire's tax proposal, which is moving right along despite some disagreements between legislative Democrats and the governor about having a reduction in certain taxes to offset the millionaire's tax. But this comes at a time when businesses in the state of Washington are already having a hard time and considering moving. The Association of Washington Businesses this week released some startling statistics from their 2026 Washington Employers Survey. They asked their members, which are business owners, if they're considering moving their personal residence out of Washington. 44% said yes. They also asked, is your business plan to expand in Washington in the next year or two? 86% said no. Morgan Irwin is with the Association of Washington Business.
We all love this place. That's why we're here. And we've been facing strong headwinds here in Washington State, and yet we remain. And we remain here because we're committed to Washington State. And this can be a wonderful place to do business, and it should be. We have incredible intellectual talent here in the Northwest, and there are businesses that still very, very much need that. And we just need to make it a little more friendly for those businesses to come here, find a home, and be part of our wonderful community.
All right, that has been Politics Unpacked for this fifth week of the legislative session. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. Politics Unpacked is brought to you by our friends at Future 42. Stay and fight. Sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that and get involved in the political process in Washington State. And to catch regular episodes of Undivided Monday through Thursday, make sure to become a subscriber at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and follow us across all social media platforms.